Hello, and welcome to Be Creator, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the creator economy. I'm Alice Audley, and I'm the founder of Be Creator, formerly known as Blogosphere. Be Creator are the UK specialists in creator events. We run category-specific shows, such as the Beauty, Travel, and Health and Wellbeing Creator Show, which bring together brands, talent managers, and creators for a day of exhibitions, panels, presentations, and networking. And we also run the Be Creator Awards, our flagship event, which celebrates the best UK creators and creator marketing campaigns of the year. Last year's event had a reach of 179 million. If you would like to see some information about our events and how to get involved, head over to becreator.co.uk. Now, onto the show. Today on Be Creator, Serious Influence, I'm joined by Holly Brooker, who is a global marketing director and has worked at the likes of Airbnb, Acast, ClassPass and Spotify.
Hi, I'm Holly. Nice to meet you. Well, at the moment, I do career breaks. I'm currently not working at the moment, but usually I work in marketing, a lot of brand marketing, consumer-focused marketing for lots of different brands.
Amazing. And let's go back to the beginning of your kind of career. Where did you start? What was your first job? What did it entail? Or actually, let's go even further. What were you passionate about at school? Did you enjoy school? Did you enjoy university?
Amazing.
Subjects?
Yeah. When you just asked that, I was like, okay, so I did work in French Connection when I was 60. No, we don't want to go back to that.
French Connection did some good stuff. And then it just lost it a bit. I used to have quite a night.
I just think I enjoyed the FC UK t-shirt when I was sort of 15, walking around like
so rebellious.
Totally. It's uniform, Mum. Get to grips. So I grew up in the very glamorous, the very gorgeous Basingstoke.
Okay.
So not a ton of marketing influence there, I won't lie, but wonderful time.
Maybe it needs a bit of remarketing.
Yes. Yeah. It won't be me. I'll never go back. But I then went to university and I was really, really hell-bent. There was a girl at French Connection called Charlie, and she told me about this course at Arts University Bournemouth called Art Event Management.
Right.
And I was like, bingo, that's what I want to do. I did lots and lots of dancing when I was younger and lots of sort of shows at the Palladium. Did you get that?
Wow.
Yeah. Sadler's Wells as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm a celebrity. I'm absolutely not. It was like we paid to be in them. But when I was there, I would sort of see the stage managers rattling around and sort of move. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to go to dance school. I cannot touch my toes. But this looks amazing. Event management looks really interesting. Charlie at French Connection told me about it, and I was completely focused on that course and doing that work. And now I look back thinking, one of my best friends went to Leeds and that looked great, and I was very much in this niche arts space that I don't know if I thrived. But it was amazing.
I went to Leeds as well. Probably at the same time as your friend, but I didn't really enjoy Leeds.
Didn't you?
No.
We should have taken you under our wing. I used to, in my Fiat Bento, shake
up
70 miles an hour.
Headingley or Hyde Park.
Truly. Yeah. I think she was in the Henry Price Halls first.
Okay.
Year.
I was in Boddington. They no longer exist.
Oh, right, that
yeah,
bad.
They got knocked down. They were that bad.
Well, I was very much, you know, not enjoying necessarily the social life too much of my university, but there was a lecturer on one of my courses that did marketing for Cancer Research UK, a woman called Roz. Shout out to Roz. And she was amazing. And I really was like getting into the marketing of the events, the practical side of it, the staying up all night, the sort of comfy shoes and breaking a nail wasn't who I was in sort of event management terminology. You know, you do lots of this. You can talk all about that. I've got a degree in it, apparently, but it was definitely that marketing side of things that I really, really sort of took to, and I really enjoyed it because for me it just feels like psychology. And we will get onto the Real Housewives of New Jersey in a minute. I'm not going to let you escape that. But I love the psychology of it all. I really, really enjoyed that. And I also sort of finished my degree, lovely, and much like Hailey Bieber, and I am a Nepo baby, is that
right? Okay.
I was actually at my grandfather's funeral. My mum's cousin's daughter's husband was there. Lovely man. I know.
In a minute,
we'll talk about marketing, but not just yet. And he let me know about his sister-in-law who just started at Spotify as VP of comms. And I was very much like, please, can I have a conversation? Please, can I go in? And I went to meet Angela Watts, who lots of people in the industry will know. Absolutely amazing, amazing, brilliant, one of the best in the best and the best in the industry. She sort of took little 21-year-old, newly graduated me. I actually don't even know if I'd graduated at this point. And I took her my CD-ROM disc of my final event that I did. And
what was the final event that you did?
It was a men's fashion show. Okay. He's in Fashion. Yeah. Riotous success.
And this was the organisation of the event and the marketing of it.
Exactly.
Everything.
Yeah. Exactly. So you were in teams, and I was always sort of the marketeer, which involved lots of diligent flyer printing and photo shoots. And I just loved that side of how are we literally going to get them in the doors, that sort of thing. Anyway, I showed her this, and I think she was like, sweet, sweet child, God bless you. Sure, have a couple of months of internship.
Yeah.
And that's when I started at Spotify.
Paid internship?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Minimum wage, baby.
Because those were the years of the unpaid internship.
Well.
Or the pay to have the joy of being an intern. Yes. Not that I did that.
Yes, yes. So I always now, in my great old 33 years of age, look at Gen Z, which I'm not going to do on this podcast. I'm going to speak about them beautifully. But a lot of the time I put my hands on my hips and say, when I was an intern, I was making coffee.
Yeah.
I was buying breakfasts. I made the Nespresso coffee machine out of nuts and bolts. I literally was just there for hands-on, what do you need help with? You need help with throwing the moldy fruit away from the fruit bowl. Absolutely. You know, I was definitely.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I got interviewed once for a blog post, and it was talking about career and where you started.
Mm.
And like piece of advice you would give, I made the tea.
Yes.
And it wouldn't be being asked to make the tea. You preempt the tea.
Mm.
And also, making the tea isn't a representation of your ability or where you're going to go in your life, career, but it's an important thing to do.
Yes. Well, yeah. Darling, you're even better than me. I don't think I even preempted the tea.
Oh, no. High-stress environment, you know,
totally,
newspaper deadlines.
Totally.
So, like, does anyone want a cup of tea?
Yes. And even, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously semi-joking. There was tons of learning and just... There was about, at the time, I think, 40 people in the Spotify office. So just the, like, osmosis learning that you have by being around the very, very select few that are building up the business. And one of those people is Daniel Ek.
So yeah, wow.
Just being in and around that environment at sort of my baby embryo age, like, it was incredible. And I was so, so fortunate for that experience. And I just think I must have done something right, because I had a 3-month internship. I actually had to miss my last day because of the snow, and I was commuting from Glorious Basingstoke, and that was it. And I was done, and I thought, you know, amazing, Angela, for giving me the opportunity. Off I'll go into the world. And I remember I was working at Computer 2000 for a little bit, which was like an office in Basingstoke.
Yeah.
Where I would chase down packages that hadn't been sent.
After having had the internship at Spotify.
Totally.
Yeah, that's...
And Computer 2000 even said to me, "You're doing so well. You know, we really want to offer you a job here." And I didn't know then that I was obviously manifesting from my higher worth. And I was like, no, thank you, Computer 2000. Mm. So they then fired me.
Oh.
And then I went to work at a kids club for right. Easter holidays. And as I was there sort of, you know, playing ball games and working out what I was doing, trying to apply for jobs on the side, seeing what's going on, Angela called back and said, "I think I've got something here. Come back up for a meeting." And of course the meeting was this amazing lunch at Bob Rickard. I don't know how I, you know, managed all this, but it was brilliant. And she was like, "Come back as sort of this assistant executive role. We're staffing up. We're really starting to grow. Come back in." And that's when I got my sort of full-time position a couple of months after. And then, yeah, I was at Spotify for 9 years after that. Very lucky.
A very good phone call to get.
It was.
Do you remember
yeah,
how you felt in that moment? Being...
I think I felt insane. I think I felt absolutely mad. Like, and especially because I was stood on the field where they were like, kids club was playing football, and I was like, "Mum, I'm a star." Like, literally, I was like, "What is going?" It was absolutely incredible. So, so fortunate, but I must have made a good tea.
Mm. You mentioned there the osmosis and the learning of being around people post COVID, and you know, you talked about Gen Z, that there is a rise in, you know, work from home exclusively. What are your, you know, having learned so much?
Yeah, totally. I don't want to force my personal opinions or ways of working on anyone. I don't understand remote only. I don't, you know, as mentioned, I'm on this controversial career break, only controversial to my mother. And I'm only applying for jobs that have an office. I'm only looking for those opportunities that have people, because I think it is the most important thing in the world. It's just human connection, especially in marketing. You know, we look at all these numbers when we're in marketing and we go, "Oh, the graph's going up, the graph's going down." That graph is people. They're humans. If you want to sort of look at human behavior and know what's going on and what impact and why did you choose a sandwich and, you know, why did you pick that instead of a salad? What's going on there? To know what's happening in the world, I think it's very difficult to do that from one's, you know, study or the sort of desk in the bedroom.
There's the difference between, you know, fully remote, hybrid,
Yeah, but I totally recommend, especially early on days.
Yeah.
And the, you know, other piece of obviously that amazing learning and seeing, you know, how people were operating and what they were doing, what they were talking about, what was really important to the business, how we would have the chats, what meetings were going on, what they were doing.
The observing piece, yeah.
Totally. The other massive, you know, I was in my 20s. I needed, they are now my best friends in the world. They're my total sort of social group. They're my family. You know, it really, really is important for me in work and in jobs. I think lots of us have this where it's like half of it is, it's just a job, 9 to 5, get home. And then lots of us are like, well, it's constant. As I say, for me, marketing is 24/7. You're influenced all the time.
I think your first role is where you, in life, there feel like there are different stages of being open to friendships, and school is one, university is one, and first job is the other one.
Yes.
And that's where you do make really, you know, I've great friends from back then. So you're at Spotify for 9 years. The first role you have is executive assistant. Is that what you...
Marketing and communications executive.
Marketing and communications executive.
Yes.
Then could you talk a little bit about, over those 9 years, what roles you went into, how the company developed, and your first... I mean, this was 2013. Did you start?
I joined at Spotify in 2010.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, 2010 to 2019.
Right.
Again, very, very lucky and privileged to see it throughout those years.
So the year that Instagram launched, you joined.
Exactly,
Spotify.
Exactly, yeah.
And Spotify was 2007.
You're testing me now. I'm like, it absolutely was. Quickly, Google's rummages around it. Yeah, yes, it, yes, big nod.
Well,
I should know that, shouldn't I? But so I'd say for the 90% of my time at Spotify, my roles were very much based on UK marketing.
Yeah.
So how the business ebbed and flowed. When I joined, there sort of wasn't really this substantial marketing budget. There wasn't really a traditional marketing org. Obviously, we had an amazing marketing communications org, but during my time there, sort of there was a CMO bought in, which hadn't happened before. Infamously, Daniel didn't believe in marketing when I first joined. It was this very sort of known proverb that he thought, if the product is good enough, it'll sell itself. And just, I mean, so much of that is true. And without a good product, you know, it's very difficult to shift anything. But
you need to make people aware of it, though.
Exactly. And the way that the team sort of built and evolved from sort of, we were doing completely grassroots, sort of these festival partnerships that we sort of paid for on a shoestring. And again, a very much physical. We were like, let's hand out things and have people come into things. And that's before we even had the basics of what we were doing in UK marketing set up. That was all happening in the interim. The team was definitely building up around me. I was very still the pipsqueak, a very good friend, still calls me grasshopper from those days because I was sort of the junior team member. And so it was building around and surrounded by these incredible, a lot of the time, women who were sort of doing big pieces of research to push forward marketing and sort of joining Angela's amazing side to sort of pull together all of the reasons why we needed marketing. So I would be going on that journey as well, whilst also very much still on the ground doing, you know, the social media for the business, sort of helping
out. But going to those events as well, which obviously was your...
100%. I was, leading and executing on all of that for a time.
And Spotify is still doing, I mean, obviously with the COVID break, but they just had a big creator event for their Spotify for podcasters the other week. So it's
The events they do now are just absolutely insane. I was so privileged to be along that journey and go through from, you know, pushing forward for how is Spotify going to do marketing, what's it going to look like, watching the team sort of bubble up around me again, more and more learning of, you know, then going through to, we had a media agency for the first time, and then we had a global media, and then we sort of pull in all these different partners and these different ways of working.
Did you enjoy that? But obviously there are so many benefits of being lean and agile to then having bigger agencies, obviously a great way to expand the sort of approvals and things like that. Did it slow the pace slightly, or did you still
never
feel, no
okay. For me personally, it didn't ever feel like that, and especially as I sort of went on this UK marketing journey, I loved it. I loved the more process and the more we got influenced by other territories and other markets, and the more these global campaigns launched, what now is very famously Wrapped, that sort of year in review. I was there when it was called Year in Music, and it was sort of launching off the ground. It was all based on product. I think Spotify has this amazing gift of an incredible product that makes you want to cry because you love it so much. And then these wonderful campaigns and brilliant use of product to tell amazing stories that actually make these marketing playbooks that were just the best thing in the world to learn from, and just understanding how we were influencing and what happens. I've got a couple of friends that are still at Spotify, and as I mentioned, all my friends are from that time. There's a joke that no matter what we did, the numbers went up.
Yeah.
But I will stand by and say not at all. It was, you know, it was very much this huge team of incredibly talented people working towards a really, really focused goal within marketing. And again, the focus on brand. You know Spotify because of its brand. Mm. It really sucks you in, and it's that amazing sort of leadership role that it plays when you think of Nike, and you now hopefully, probably, maybe think of Spotify too.
Yeah.
And that's work. That's really, really brand focused marketing that takes now what is a giant, giant machine. So for me, going from, you know, very low-key local activity that really was important, it was so important to sort of get those learnings all the way through to then when Spotify had sort of very much very senior US-based marketing hires that we would, you know, scuttle around and learn from and sit under that as an EMEA team and scuttle back over and see how we could, was there opportunity for localization. And that's what I do now a lot in my current roles, is look at that model. Is it a local marketing team? Is that how we're working? Or is it a global marketing business where we've got sort of economies of scale at our fingertips and we know all of the programs will work and there is opportunity for localization too? That balance is so fine. And I think the luck I had going from one to the other at Spotify was amazing.
You start doing events and they're handing out stuff right at the beginning.
Yeah.
When do you first come across creators like at Spotify and using influencers as part of marketing strategy, or when were they incorporated, or did this happen? Because after Spotify, you went to ClassPass.
I did go
and
to ClassPass.
Then Acast.
And then Airbnb.
And then Airbnb.
Yes.
Which is a very impressive sort of list of,
you
know.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I still, who knows? You never think it when you're in it, and you always sort of feel like you need to guest star on Elizabeth Day and go through your deep, deep failures. But yeah.
Well, taking Spotify out of it, actually, we will go back to when you first came across creators.
Okay.
But out of the other three, what was your favourite and why?
Boring Spotify. It was my
You can't have Spotify.
I can't have
Spotify. No, out of the other three.
Out of my other three, Airbnb. Yeah. I'm going to say, Acast was really nice. Acast was just a group great people wanting to do amazing things, but probably Airbnb, because I joined at a time as a maternity cover when they were sort of ramping up post-COVID, and they were ramping up in a way that was brand first. You know, there's lots of case studies at the moment. The Marketing Week podcast that's just come out, I think, uses Airbnb as one of the case studies for using that brand focus, brand first approach, and then sort of the smaller performance takes a smaller role, but you see the incremental sort of add-on of growth that ultimately makes an amazing argument for brand.
Yeah.
The campaign that I worked on at Airbnb, Made Possible by Host, which was a huge global campaign, I just looked after the sort of EMEA remit, was such a pleasure. The creative excellence and the amazing focus on marketing that business had.
We'll do a deep dive on that. I think for listeners, if we stick in a chronological, which I completely took you away from.
Chaos. I took you away.
But first time coming across creators, which I assume happened in your tenure at Spotify.
Totally did. And I think I don't want to be this waffle machine, which I'm desperately trying not to do, so keep me on track. But, you know, the word creator, and I know as we know them as sort of traditional, what was X amount of years ago, influencer, and how it sort of moved up.
And blogger. And
blogger, exactly. Trying to disseminate when that happened. But when I was, especially at Spotify, we would look at an artist as an influencer. We would see like the buy-in from artists or not buy-in. That was a really famous sort of piece of communication throughout the whole time there, which artists were on and off, you know, Beyonce taking out, like that influence, and again, it's really similar to sort of the Nike example, when they use these, what's it called, like influence bias, which they've been doing for years and years and years. So I think there's that piece that was always going on, when actually it was quite later on, I'd say, in my journey, when we'd sort of use or have artist marketing, which again, big global function, and we would sort of look at it from that UK perspective. But the joy of looking at it from a UK perspective is that local artists for us are Adele, Ed Sheeran, you know, amazing, yeah, amazing talent, and having that usage of influence, and then further down from that, those actual influencer campaigns and how we use it. Also, another tack onto that is that we had a big brand ambassador campaign with students. Mm-hmm. And again, even though these are just humans on the ground, it's not as we know it, as we discuss it, my psychological lens on marketing, the influence that we'd ask these brand ambassadors in universities
the students, but the influencers, did you have brand ambassadors that were influencers? Were they on sort of an annual retainer, or was it based, you know?
The student ambassador program was actually a big, big, big program, big campaign piece that we eventually had to sort of run 5 year always on, that was sort of constant about the messaging in market within these brand ambassadors. It was sort of a year long program. We'd have tentpole activities within that and constantly asking the ambassadors in market to sort of push forward with what it was that we wanted. And again, really early on measuring stuff about how, again, a physical presence is the only way you're going to sort of engage somebody in that environment, in a student environment, let's say. That was a big stake in the ground, I might regret to say that soon. But and then seeing, well, are we seeing subscriptions come back from that? Actually, is it the same brand model of, let's show them who we are as a brand, let's meet them on a level that really matches with sort of student community. And we ran these incredible events all through the student marketing agency Seed, who I think are now sat under Amplify, still doing amazing, amazing student work in that space, and sort of moving forward with them to have this constant influence in market. And again, it was all through that sort of student lens of who is an influence. And we'd, yeah, Seed would run big programs to see who that would be. But then separately to that, I think probably around the same time is when we started doing, or just after, actual influencer conversations about actual influencer campaigns in, you know, what we would now know to be very, very traditional creator marketing.
Yeah.
So they...
Who did you run those through? If you had Seed that was doing your student stuff, and also what was the process on selecting?
Yeah, so we, as I remember it, God, this is a memory test, isn't it? I really should have done some revision. As I remember it, the real, like, focus on creator, or what it then would have been, influencer, I noticed we're staying away from that word, the I word, was through an agency called New Stance. And they really bought in and helped us with that, what is now very, very traditional campaign management, sort of, and I'm speaking on the UK's behalf, yeah, here, pulling that in into our campaigns. How are we going to do it? They very much did lots and lots of the selection process for us, within which, you know, creators are we going to work with? Why are we going to do it? You know, this feels now like really early on. Maybe this was 2017, 2018. And the way we worked with them then at Spotify, I want to say, God, someone's going to pull up a document and be like, wrong. The way I feel like it happened was, we would have campaigns that ran as they were. So either an artist marketing campaign, Stormzy's birthday party. We ran a big event for Stormzy for his birthday, like a Love Island Villa style thing, fly out the fans to be with him. And that was a big sort of piece of bringing the fans together, because obviously Spotify is really focused on connecting fans with artists. So that's what we were doing. We would tack on influencer.
Yeah.
Similarly, if we were doing sort of a product, big product campaign, the Wrapped campaign, we would tack on influencer.
All through New Stance.
Exactly, at the time. Yes, yeah, exactly. And maybe there was other things at that point.
It hasn't been in-house, though, I don't think, solely now, the could be. Spotify.
Could be, don't know. Could be. I wouldn't want...
I mean, they have creator teams, definitely, on the podcast,
exactly,
side.
Exactly, exactly.
But I think there is still agency outsourcing there.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because, yeah, what are your views on sort of in-house... You've mentioned tack on there, and that's very much what influencer sort of was, and now it's much more part of the... sort of pie from the beginning. Do you, there are benefits, you know, to influence agencies living and breathing, relationships. But if you are a company at the size and, you know, with the resource of a Spotify, you know, look at Sky. Sky have in-housed influencer. What are your views on that?
Yeah, I would want my tons and tons of my brilliant agency friends and partners to continue to thrive. But what I love about that is I do think, and especially my style of marketing and the principles that I base now my plans and work from, is this holistic vision. I think you can't have them as these separated units. It's got to have 360 unity around all of your campaign. It's one brand message. The consumer, whoever they are, it's us, like it's everyone, won't know the difference between internally you saying we're going to do this one thing and it's going to live over here, and internally, you know, externally we're going to do this. They will see one message. So actually having it in-house, for me, I think that makes total sense, because it should be treated as this sort of one viewpoint of what are we trying to say. Very, very clear messaging. Let's not sort of like add, confuse, take away and move around. So I think that's great. But I do think you could do that via an agency as well. I do think you can have that holistic viewpoint if, as a central marketing team, you treat it as such. But yeah, my experience actually in all brands has very much, it's been this sort of add-on. It hasn't thus far in the places that I've worked, and doesn't mean that it's not happening. It is treated as sort of like, oh, and then what do you say? Oh, and then what, you know, we've got these like
maybe it's
pieces
because
of pie.
With the companies that you have been at are so big. I know that you were on the journey with Spotify as it became really big, that the marketing spends, you know, what were you talking, like hundreds of millions, and therefore proportionally it is a smaller add-on.
And I think at the time it would have been new.
Yeah.
So that there's no one, but I still think the newness of creator marketing is still a huge plus point in, I think I was reading a lot about sort of Web3 using creators to test that out for your brand in a really great way where everyone benefits, not in a way of sort of feed them to the lions and see who comes back, but much more as like, actually there's a real like breeding ground here for experimentation. And so I still think there is this positive newness within creator marketing. But yeah, I think maybe it's purely from a timing perspective, and actually we'll find you someone from Spotify that can come and chat about it now and tell you all their brilliant plans and what they're obviously doing, because I think it'll probably be more integral. But even the place I've been at, it just hasn't been yet. But maybe my next role, I'll come back and tell you.
Well, yeah, I think what did they say, 79% are increasing creator spend year on year. So and the industry is, although when you've been in it a while, it feels like, oh, I've been around for ages. Yeah. Actually, it is relatively new in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, totally.
So you leave Spotify and then you go to ClassPass.
Yes.
What was that experience like? What was your role there?
So I joined ClassPass as head of UK marketing. And then very quickly, I think they realised they were a really agile company. I think, again, trying to have that huge growth spurt.
Female founded, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
I think I listened. What's the
Pyle?
Yeah, Pyle. That's exactly. Yes, on Reed Hastings' Masters of Scale podcast.
I mean, she was absolutely amazing. And just sort of on this big growth trajectory, trying to work out how to do it. And so I joined as head of UK marketing. Actually, weirdly, I went for a brand role there, head of global brand, I think it was, and I didn't get it. And they were like, we've hired someone from Nike, but we want you to do this other job. And I was like, cool, fine, I'm not brand.
Yeah.
The head of brand is now my best friend, Megan. We literally worked out that actually she's had many a job before me that we've gone for, and she's amazing. So yeah, I came in as head of UK marketing and then very quickly became head of European marketing, and that had PR comms underneath it. And then sort of we all quickly realized it was in this really tricky point. I think we were ready, as sort of myself, the head of global brand, Meg, a couple of others, to sort of get it into a brand space. You know, lots of people look at ClassPass and they're like, oh, amazing. No, I actually don't use it. It's expensive, right? It's gym membership. We're talking like Third Space, that thing that you spend a lot of money on. But there was no brand. There was nothing going, no, we could, we say all the time, we could own the endorphin. Exactly what Peloton have done. What you see them do. It's expensive, but it's amazing. And lots of people from Spotify are now at Peloton. You see this amazing sort of marketing trajectory there. I think, from lots and lots of brilliant minds. But Classpass didn't have it. And so we were noodling around. And again, I think I was...
Did you have good budget to play with? I mean, was that the first time as, you know, head of marketing that you were entirely in charge of dividing up this
totally
budget?
Absolutely.
Was that quite fun or stressful?
Yes, I'd say they had a performance marketing playbook that was, you know, A, B, C equals D.
And that doesn't sound like you
knew.
No,
it doesn't sound. And so I was like, let it run, let it be. And I'm going to put all of my efforts into persuading you that
brand,
what you're doing by approaching unprimed audiences in the bottom of the funnel is leaky. We are, you know, people are falling out of this bucket. We are not doing well. So I bought in one of my favourite agencies, Bite, who won our first UK social agency at Spotify. Amazing guys, now owned by Debt Agency. Really, really brilliant guys. They were amazing at Spotify and sort of completely transforming what we did in social and making really, really brilliant strides in innovation. And yeah, great, great work. So I was like, we need Bite to come in, analyse what we're doing from this perspective of, you know, who we're talking to, why we're talking to them, who they are, and realise that nobody knows who we are. Like, no one's going to pay for it. No one's going to pay £75 not knowing. So I really focused my efforts on that and was like doing my TED talk, rousing the like getting everyone about this is what we're going to do. And then pandemic. So I actually was only there for 6 months. I felt slightly, and not in any negative way at all, a little bit like a consultant there.
Yeah.
Which worked. I was a bit sort of, again, with my brilliant, my Meg, with brilliant Meg that was working. And then we had Tish as well sort of join us on this brand manager position. There was these three of us that like...
Is Meg still there?
She is not. No. She's doing other brilliant things. But all three of us were like, we're probably going to not stick around because it's... Can't feel the movement. And of course, because they're, you know, they were obviously at a time when they were thinking, what is net? Where's it going to go? You know, is there going to be a sale? Is that what's happening? I think there was lots and lots of conversations. And
meanwhile,
we would
Peloton
try and...
thrives during
exactly,
pandemic.
Exactly. So I then actually right before the pandemic had conversations with Acast. And I think because I was like, can I please go back to a Swedish audio company that is full of democracy? And again, not that Classpass wasn't great, you know, ton of great people. And I use it every day still. It's my favourite product on the planet. I would go back in and try my TED talk again to sort of move the brand. But I think it's really difficult when you've got such slim margins on, you know, the product versus what you're charging. I think that's really difficult. So went to Acast for the pandemic then and was global marketing director there. So looking after the entire marketing org. Really interesting time because of the pandemic. So we're doing pandemic marketing. We're sort of going... Is everyone all right?
The rise of podcasts during the pandemic was huge.
It was amazing. Yeah, I think within the first sort of 6 months, it was like 23% increase of the industry in general. So it was a total privilege to be there during that time. Again, I very much got to work on those founding principles. They were already launching a new brand, which was great and really exciting and amazing work done by lots of the team. But my focus was definitely on sort of, let's do some planning, right? Let's do some like... real founding principles of what we want to do. Let's set up what we're going to do, how we're going to achieve it, what needles are we moving, like what's going on here. So just sort of really getting a baseline, a really nice foundation of what does marketing in this business look like? What are we responsible for? Because I think when I was maternity cover at Airbnb, I was maternity cover for Lulu, and she and I used to joke a lot that when the business is going well, the business is doing really well. And when it's not going so well, what's marketing doing?
Yeah.
They're like, it starts with us a lot of the time. So I think setting those foundations up at Acast to say, well, what are we responsible for? What are we going to bring? And what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? With what teams? What does it look like? But a lot of the time, it was a lot, you know, just really holding tight. And Acast is an amazing company for sort of that people culture, the number one sort of piece that they talk about. So it was a great time. And really interesting for marketing because it's B2B. So Acast, I think there's an arm of the business that looks at you and I creating a podcast, an extremely successful one that everyone's going to listen to. And they want more people to do that. So more, you know, after today, I might go, wow, I've got so much to say. I should do this for 10 more hours. I'm going to go through ACARS. But then a big chunk of it is like business. It's BBC Worldwide. It's The Economist. It's Guardian. You know, it's these, it's, you know, Fern Cotton. It's these, this real B2B sway. So understanding, and again, if we go back to that influence piece, who's going to make that influence? You know, who's going to sort of sway? Because it's a personal decision, you know, as you very well know, like making a podcast is really personal. So I think the marketing of that was really interesting. But I'd say at my sort of 18 months there, I was much more sort of foundationally looking at setting the teams up for success and sort of understanding what it would look like and who the people are within that.
So with Acast and the creator podcast that came from that, was it Emma Gannon, Control Alt Delete? Was that Acast? Yeah. And I think maybe, I want to say Estée Lalonde. I feel like I remember people kind of going into the studios.
Yes. Yeah.
As Acast, and there's Audio Boom, and now Spotify is putting so much emphasis with the acquisition of Anchor that's rebranded for Spotify for podcasters. Is that dangerous territory, would you say, for an Acast and an Audio Boom, or is there space in the market for it all?
Yeah, I mean, with my Acast spokesperson hat on, absolutely. You know, again, I think they've got great. I think the USP of Acast is that you can go on Apple, you can go on Spotify, you can go on these platforms, and versus a Spotify where it's on Spotify.
Yeah,
and I think the conversation there is really around exclusive content.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'm a particular expert on that, but when we were at Acast, we also launched the Patreon partnership. And again, I think there's so much space there and so much space specifically for creators, and showing that Acast is totally supporting that, not to say that Spotify isn't totally supporting that. And as we're seeing now, sort of Instagram and other platforms launching that subscription paid for service within it's from harking back to 8 minutes ago when it was this tacking on of influencer on marketing plans, and actually seeing now, well, they're their own credible industry that has huge profit, and you know, everybody wants a piece of that pie, and how can both, you know, both sides benefit? And I think Acast is within that.
How did the partnership with Patreon work, and was that part of your remit within those sort of principles when you're at Acast?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely sort of a merging of create, so the creators could on each platform could then sort of merge together and sort of see that how easy it was, and it was an intrinsic link, I think, within products. So it was a real product partnership. And at my time there is when the sort of partnership launched, and we started to look at, okay, how do we speak to Patreon consumers? How do we sort of move them around? And I think it was very much a sort of exercise in performance marketing in a way through the systems and pieces like that. So I think the other interesting part is it's a very industry piece of marketing, right? It's a very industry-led launch. It's very those in the know.
Yeah.
And how far do you want to communicate that out? So our role was sort of looking at where are we going to take the launch and to who, and actually is it just really good for the business as a whole, and that's how it's going to work, because it just bolsters this creator conversation. And in marketing for us, it was really going, well, how far do we want to take it and where do we want to put it? So yeah, and all ultimately, I think, again, boring, during pandemic, right? So when we're going, there's this really great part, you know, the two products are coming together as one, like this is really interesting, you can access lots of features and benefits, this is going to be really cool
and perfect to go after a Patreon sort of audience, because they are paying subscription. So it's sort of perfect crossover. You're targeting the exact right people that actually will spend on the content.
Exactly.
Whereas when they're integrating it into Instagram and other services, when all that content has previously been given away for free, I think it's quite hard to sometimes put up the paywall.
Totally. It's that, yeah, change in behaviour.
Views on OnlyFans, talking of subscription, because they do a lot in the creator space. When you hear OnlyFans, what?
Yes, I think of porn.
Right.
I watched the Netflix documentary that's just come out, but I think that's on YouPorn, and about lots of different things. And it showed on that, through that documentary, that sort of weird pivot that OnlyFans did last October, where they were like, no longer adult content, we're getting rid of all that. And everyone was like, what? But this is our, you know.
It's because the bank said that they weren't going to fulfill the payments. I think it was August 21.
Was it all? Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And then they did a U-turn the week later.
It did the U-turn the week later. And I think, for me, I just have not... And it also makes me think, if we're playing that game, what is it? Kerry Katona. And I just think it is... what the more we can set up platforms, services and payments for safe business of those who are consensual, great. Like, much more within that remit. And I do think, when I think about creators I really enjoy and that work and the patron spaces that I sort of could move into, I don't see the sort of difference. I think it's another place of trying to make, and I think this is a lot of this documentary is about, trying to make a safe space for sex workers is what the conversation is about, and a safe business space of where, if that is the choice, and I don't want to, I'm no ethical, you know, expert, and I'm in no place to sort of put a stake in the ground. But yeah, I think...
They also have OnlyFans TV, which is the free version where they're doing productions, which has sort of just started.
Right.
But I think, you know, you hear OnlyFans, think porn.
Exactly.
You know, I agree, having a safe space. I mean, there are so many complexities to it.
Exactly, of which I am no expert.
Yeah,
but as a brand of the next company I go and work for.
As a marketer going into OnlyFans, and there, if so, I'm from OnlyFans, I want to hire you to showcase that we're not just an adult-only platform. You come in, what are your first steps? What's your first day at OnlyFans?
Oh, I'm like, can we just put that in the too hard basket and have a lie down? I'm like, that is crumbs. And I was going to say... You know, as a brat, I don't know if I'd ever advertise, even if it was the arm in which they, you know, the TV or production arm, or the OnlyFans puppies, where it was just all about puppy content, not anything weird, just puppies being puppies. I don't know. As a brat, I think it's a similar conversation. It seems that the Love Island conversations within marketing are having sort of settling down, and it especially partnerships with eBay, but I'm not sure that negates the fast fashion side of stuff, fine, but I'm not sure it negates the bits and pieces that are more tricky. I just think
Do you think that it would be beneficial to have a new name for the non-adult?
Yeah, totally.
Part. Yeah.
Totally. And sort of have that umbrella of the company. But I think it would be really, really, really difficult to sway public opinion in that much of a dramatic way. And... Yeah, I it would be so complex that I'm like...
Be an interesting job.
It would. I would please like not to do it.
Okay. Right. Acast. ClassPass. Acast. Airbnb.
Yes.
Maternity cover.
Maternity cover for Brilliant, Brilliant Lulu. Hi, Lulu. And it was at a really interesting time. I felt like, even though I was having... a great time at Acast and doing really brilliant work and actually launching a new website that I'd, again, TED talked my way into and been like, we need to do this. I actually left before it launched and things like that. So it was difficult to leave, but an amazing, amazing, amazing opportunity that I was just had to do. And I think, as I said, I think, again, 27 years ago, because I've been talking so much, their focus on marketing is just woof. Like, it is a marketer's dream to... be surrounded by the best of the best. The senior sort of leadership team within marketing are amazing. Like, the work that comes out, it's definitely, you know, got that US focus. They're based in the US, and it's definitely got that lens on things. But again, back to my experience at Spotify, I'm so used to it.
Yeah.
I'm so used to this sort of local, global. At one point we said global and it was, we wanted to throw ourselves out windows. But, you know, I like that. I really enjoyed that. So it felt like an amazing, amazing opportunity to go and do. So it was much more, my role was obviously sort of popping Lulu's team under my wing for that year and sort of managing and looking after Amir while she wasn't there.
And the campaign that you worked on?
Was the Made Possible by Hosts. So I'd say that was sort of, the huge chunk of the work was this massive, massive, massive campaign Made Possible by Hosts of this post-pandemic, back into the world with creative excellence beyond imagination. Like, when you sit and see these ads for the first time, they are brilliant. I'd urge you to just go on YouTube and watch them. They are just so, you know, exactly what one would want to do with a brand that's about ultimately holidays, you know, feel this feeling of getaway and excitement, and on the USP that it's about hosts and hosting, and you're not just sort of staying in a Hilton, thank God. I'm sure Hiltons are brilliant. But like, you know, the whole point was around the experience and the feeling. And that is just my marketing like tick box. Just having people feel ultimately makes them move and action. And what is it? You don't make any decision without your hippocampus. We're going on to brain surgery, people. Stay with us. You can't, even if you're just pushing a button when it goes right,
lights
up.
You have to decide.
You still go through the emotional part of your brain. Is that the hippocampus? Quickly, somebody help
hippocampus.
Us.
I think so. Hypothalamus, I feel, is temperature.
Ooh.
Might be wrong.
Yeah, I'm enjoying. Let's keep going.
As long as we just whack out some long words
and
pretend we know what they mean.
Yeah, I'm still going to be like, oh,
with the campaign, you talked about, so television was part of it.
Totally. Above the line, below the line, through the line, baby. We were everywhere, and even launching out of home as well as the sort of last piece of the puzzle, and all very much focused on brand. You know,
and
the
creator.
Objectives.
Did you have creator in there? You didn't. You missed out creator.
So
did you? Oh my goodness. So, right, get out.
I knew this would come up. And I'm also like, oh, I don't want anyone from Airbnb to hear this and tell me off. But the brand focus and the absolute sort of discipline it takes in a brand campaign to keep these incredible pieces of creative out in market in an exciting way that make you sort of watch the ad break, drop your bowl of ramen and go, oh my God, that was amazing. Oh, I really enjoyed that. It's strict. You can't sort of play with it and go, oh my God, let's change the ending because, you know, we've got an idea in the UK. They were like, no.
Yeah, and creator is very much about your own voice and letting them have the creative freedom to speak to their own.
Exactly. And this campaign was all about Airbnb, putting Airbnb itself, you know, if we were going to drop all
our
those performance
message,
marketing spends and focus and just go on brand, it has to be tight. It has to be, you know, really rigorous, which is difficult in EMEA when there's lots and lots of nuances in market and lots of different use cases and lots of different seasonality, which was the incredible part of the job as marketer to sort of look at those balances. What are we working with? How are we going to sort of pitch in for more, pitch in for less? Like, it was a wonderful, wonderful year, but very, very much not looking at creators. There were programs and platforms where we did work with creators, and that was for things like the Olympics. There's a big partnership with Airbnb and the Olympics. There was things like
experiences, Airbnb experiences.
Yeah, I think, yes, lots of that. And also there's Airbnb.
But they're sometimes creators themselves.
Yes.
I mean, my sister, she's does Airbnb experience for chicken keeping courses.
Amazing. I would love that, although I'm not an outdoorsy gal, so I'd have to.
You don't have to be, though. It's for, you know,
introduction
to it.
Yeah, I need that experience. We had lots of sort of policy campaigns as well about, you know, and then also host campaigns. So you should put your home up this weekend when you go on your chicken course. You could make more money. So there were, it wasn't just made possible by host, she says, but that the attention, time and focus that takes within the role meant that those other pieces, as you say, like experience and everything else, and where we were.
Did you do events as part of that campaign? Did you have an event?
No. Again, it was still pretty COVID-y time.
Yeah.
And again, you look back and you think, 21, 22. But no, January 2022,
we weren't
in the office.
Omicron was what, December 21?
Right. And we're sort of having...
They cancel your office parties. It's a
panic, squeaky bum. Oh my God, are we getting another one? We can't get another one. We've just done this marketing. But we were doing smaller creative pieces. There was a social team there that I was working with sort of members of my team to sort of pull together this influencer piece. But it had to go all the way up to the top. And, you know, they very much were like, but we can't control how the brand is perceived. And that's the whole point of creative marketing. And but we were in this big movement of, but it needs control. It needs utter sort of responsibility because we don't have these smaller programs. We don't have these sort of smaller dips and lifts. And of course there were. And of course there were lots of layers. But the majority of spend, time and focus wasn't on that. So we were doing it. I was sort of, TikTok would call us in a lot to be like, can we have a meeting about what we're going to do? And we'd absolutely go and we'd have great conversation. And the guys there were absolutely amazing. But during my time there wasn't an official launch just because of how it wasn't, the brand campaign wasn't at that level of maturity yet.
Yeah.
The teams didn't believe. And because of we all know the amount of flexibility, and it would feel like total odds if you went to one of your favorite creators, you're having a lovely little scroll and you're, oh my God, I love it when they do that. Oh my God, this is my favorite bit. And then all of a sudden it's jarring. It's, I'm going to say it, not authentic. Mm. It's taken us a long time before we've said authentic or authenticity.
Yeah, that's so true, actually.
Prize for us. We went straight to Hippocampus. and I think, so it was the right decision not to do it. And yet,
for that campaign, yeah.
For that campaign, for that time in the brand's life. And yet,
it's actually going on an experience and then creating content around that as a branded campaign would be
amazing. You know,
it's all about storytelling, isn't it?
There is a ton of opportunity, and Airbnb, or I think we said it before, like as a brand, as a hashtag or as a, you know, name on TikTok, is huge. Like it's the biggest travel brand. Or even though when I was there, I don't know what they're up to at the moment. Yeah. I'm sure more brilliant bits, but it wasn't even active in that way. So I think understanding when you've already got that big pressure, and maybe quite similar to Spotify, when you've already got lots and lots and lots of conversation and usage and brand and product, when you sort of go, we're going to be this now, you know, this is what we're going to do next, it does take a while for it to stay within that lane of authenticity. And now I've said it, I can't stop saying it.
Would you, like, looking at the places you worked, obviously massive companies, would you work, is that the type of company where you want to end up next, or would you ever consider working for something, a company that was smaller?
Great question. She's on the market.
And would you ever work at an agency, because it's all been in-house roles? Would you go to an Ogilvy, a Mediacom, a Dempsey?
I don't. I should really know this, shouldn't I, seeing as I'm looking for... So, I actually like big brands. And because I like spend on marketing and brand marketing, yeah, this stuff's expensive. I don't enjoy presenting to the board for 50K. So, I really enjoy big
brand
marketing.
Yeah, what sort of budget do you like?
Yeah, I like...
million?
Yeah, I like big... like millions and millions. Like, that's... because it's... you can do impactful work within that.
But it's this saying, isn't it, that... cheap is expensive and expensive is cheap.
Yes. We're getting tattoos after this. We're going to have to go. We're going to tattoo that on our bodies. Yeah, 100. I'm sponge. I love learning. So actually the more senior marketing leadership I can have, the better. And so actually maybe is that advertising agency world, could that be really cool? Because I just would sponge up more and learn more. Or would answering to a client make me want to sleep under a piano? Who knows? I think, and then within the smaller space, I am a control freak and I like to own marketing and I like to say this is what we're going to do and I like to have it all within my control. And so thus, ergo, therefore, a smaller brand might really suit my skill set, but I could run into those hurdles again when it comes to me going, please, can I just have a little bit of money?
Yeah. A well-funded startup could be.
A well-funded startup that would have total immediate trust
and doesn't want to just do performance.
Yes, and that's something that with all the conversations I'm having, a lot of sort of director of growth, you know, chats happening, and I'm just not that gal. I'm that sort of brand holistic piece, and you know, within creator space, that for me comes in the bundle, that's, you know, within the parachute. You know, there's parachutes at school when you wrap it all up together. That's really where I see this going. I don't see anything sort of turning around being like, rook, crumbs, backtrack, actually creators are only this and this. I just see it moving forward more holistically. So that's how I'd want to do it. But knowing that within a bigger brand, I do still think there are sort of smaller campaigns happening. It's not necessarily treated the same way, but should it be due to authenticity? I don't know. I annoyingly don't have the answers.
It sounds like everything is moving though in the right direction,
yes,
for creator.
Yeah, yeah,
you would,
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I think so. My thoughts are between the platforms and the creators, actually, yes. Obviously you've got sort of creators are under ASA, aren't they? Advertising Standard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And CAP.
So within that, yes, I think there's actually this really mutually beneficial relationship going on between them, and more, you know, services and platforms and sort of areas of social media spaces are being made better for creators and creators.
There's also boards now. So there's the Influencer Marketing Trade Body and the Digital Creator Association that's just launched as well. So
right. So within that, I find, okay, yes, it's just getting more and more intrinsically linked. They're seeing the importance of creators. Creators are actually starting to see, okay, we're working together, not against each other. Great, great, great. This is becoming much, or, you know, just more and more harmonized. Great. Where I see a question mark is around the consumer. And when are we going to get bored of QVC Instagram? When are you and I going to want to go on Instagram, look at our mates' holiday pics? We're going to want to, you know, upload a story of us drinking a mimosa. Unfortunately, that's not happening right now. But, and be much more connected with a friend, you know, in that be real world of, I just want to see my mates and hang out with my mates and know what they're up to. This is how I like to work with them, to see my 10 friends having fun on holiday. I really, really enjoy that. That's where I get my dopamine. And not get lost in buying some jeans off Mother Denim, like, because I've got looped into the influencer QVC world. And so for me,
it's... Maybe there'll be stricter curation then, you being much more conscious about your feeds and what you're sort of following and muting. And then the people that you do let in to your world, it may be friends, but also those creators that you really feel like you have the affinity with that are, I guess... Well, YouTubers often are ones that have the most connected audiences because people are spending actual long time with them.
Like it's
half an hour. I'm watching your, you know.
Absolutely. But will, and I think that's all definitely happening and within that space. But for me, it's much more about like, but they're never going to make it less addictive. They're never going to stop the casino scroll. The fight for attention, and especially for sort of us as advertisers and people within marketing, we want the space to be addictive. You know, that's where I see the tension. Mm-hmm. I actually don't, for me personally, my crystal ball of creative marketing, which everyone's like, but you haven't really done any. I'm like, no, I did some. There was some influence on the plane. We just still, you know, we invited them to gigs. But, you know, that world, I actually see it getting more and more progressive and integrated and the trends and everything. I think, great. It's much more about, will you and I just want to one day delete every app? Well, we want to like remove YouTube and have, you know, a different experience.
It's interesting.
And I don't know. And it could just be because I'm a millennial and I'm, you know, not a...
I think there is definitely an increased fatigue in, well, maybe we're not quite there yet because we're in the moment of now short form content, watch, but actually the rise in podcast, if you'd have said to somebody you're going to sit and listen to somebody for 45 minutes, I know we have vodcast now and clips of that happening, but it's a very nice and actually quite tranquil experience to listen to something and not be distracted. This age of distraction, I think they do need to kind of work on, because actually, if you're looking at something for 3 seconds, are you going to buy it? Yes, it counts as a view and an impression, but it sometimes I think we are losing this meaningful connection. And how do you get meaningful connections? Through spending a period of time with somebody.
Yeah, 110%. And I've probably got mascara smudged around my face because an influencer, content creator, was like, it's amazing, it doesn't smudge. And I watched all the, and I was like, okay, fine, I'll buy it some mascara. Okay, fine, bye. Click, 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 done. Oh, that was quick. Okay, well, yes, this industry is worrying. And it's not very good. And I'm just like...
Was that somebody that you followed for a long time?
Not at all.
Right.
I was in the casino, baby. Yeah. I was throwing my chips around. And I think that's obvious. And I know, you know, in their opinion, it's great, good for that, you know, whatever. But I don't think I could distinguish between an ad and someone saying it's actually very good in that mode. In the short,
exactly.
Which
is why I think there has been a rise, which we've seen, you know, of ambassadors and long-term partnerships.
Exactly, yes.
And that's better. And also having, you know, the Patreon, all the affiliates, being able to supplement your income so that you don't have to take every brand deal.
Exactly. And those long-term...
That's the difficulty, though, when you're at... a level where you maybe are making some income, but it's predominantly hobby and you have a job, authenticity. When you're at a really high level and you're bringing in some serious money, you can have the discerning eye about what you take and what you don't take, because it's not going to really, you know, you're not going to end up homeless.
Totally.
Mid-tier, you've given up your full-time job. You don't know month to month where it's coming from. That is the position where I think it's difficult to make necessarily exactly the right decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to sort of come across like, who am I to say that you shouldn't say this mascara? It probably didn't smudge on you. You know, I think that personal agency around that decision making, where you're going, yeah, I'll do that one. That's interesting. Yeah, great. We all we've all done jobs where we're like, I don't love it that much. Mm. French Connection, for example. Like, we that's all. I don't want any, you know, anyone to think that there's any judgment or anything like that. But I completely understand the landscape is way more complex than we give it credit for. But the way we consume it is not. Well, you know, everyone says it, don't they? That there's no room for context on the internet. You know, we don't allow that. We just have a big argument about something or a mascara. And I think that's it. We receive everything in 2D and it's really 3D and there's so much nuance. But you can't get that in 3 seconds and we're all goldfish, apparently. I'm trying not to be.
A big thanks to Holly for coming on the show.